Good afternoon, 5:06. Mark Carmen with you on 720 WGN. Hope you enjoyed the college football game, and I hope you're about to enjoy this amazing New Year's Eve spectacular. Sitting in for Rokon today, Andy Mazur's got your sports, David Jennings in news. We'll be getting a news update coming up at 5:30. Big show today that we have been planning for you the entire year of 2019. I've been planning the show since last January the 1st. I knew somehow, some way that I would be in here today. And I knew that Kelly Kitley was going to be joining me to start the show as we try to get you ready for 2020 and just to raise the bar, Kelly. You are a superstar. You are serendipitous psychotherapy guiding you to win your life. That's how I'm putting it. You're a licensed clinical social worker. You're in studio. Good to see you, Kelly. Thank you for coming in, and I hope you're having a great afternoon.
I am. So good to see you too, Mark.
So we're going to get everybody ready to go here for 2020, and I want to invite you to share and join us on the journey of having the best year ever, 312, or just a slightly better year, like, you know, make it go from 3% to 4%. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That's what I'm trying to do, Kelly. Just one little mini step forward. Like, I'm not going to work out every day. I'm not going to eat greens at every meal. I'm still going to have dessert. I'm probably going to get angry. And all these things are going to happen, and I'm going to set work goals, and I'll get to some, and I won't get to others. Like, you got to be realistic going into the new year, right?
I love it. You're already setting yourself up for success.
See?
Baby steps.
Set the bar low. Dream it big, but set, like, it's right? You dream big, but you make your goals, like, attainable. Get yourself, get some momentum going on here.
Well, I like using different language. It makes such a difference between, you know, are people setting resolutions? Those are vows that we make that sometimes if people fall short of that, then they beat themselves up. And it's hard to maintain when people go into the new year looking at black and white thinking and different types of behaviors that are so extreme. And so when I'm working with my clients, I'm suggesting, let's make it more manageable, tangible, small steps. If somebody's looking to maybe change jobs, for example,
sure,
rather than saying, oh my gosh, I'm going to go from, you know, my 9-to-5 job to being the CEO of a company, there are some steps we need to take in between that. And how can people set themselves up for success by writing those down, being very realistic about how they're going to go after that? And maybe you're looking at me so confused.
You know, well, I'm just looking, you know, your husband's in the studio right now. He's not talking. So I'm like writing things down. Cause like, you could like write it down, but like, then where do you put it and where does it go? And when do you look at it? Like, I want to jump you on the writing things down, because I think people write things down and then I think they never look at them again.
No, it makes such a difference, because a lot of times people keep things up in their head, and if they don't articulate, you bring it to life when you put it on paper. And, you know, I'm a big advocate for vision boards and writing out goals on paper and being able to say your intention every morning when you wake up.
Well,
I know it might sound a little cheesy, but it works. I am living proof, and I work with people who it does work
for. Will you tell us what you say when you get up in the morning? Is that too vulnerable?
No, not too. Nothing's too vulnerable. Well, it's kind of like that Saturday Night Live skit. You know, Stuart Smalley, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Right.
That manifests into really believing in yourself and building confidence.
So you go straight Stuart Smalley into the mirror. I am good enough. I'm smart enough. I did the old honeymoon recently, and I was on the tennis court against the pro down at the Half Moon in Jamaica, right?
Uh-huh.
And if I lose another point, I'm going to lose the match. And I was sitting there, I was like, you will win this point. You will win this point. That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, who was the woman in the movie with Kevin Spacey? I will sell this house. I will sell this house.
Oh, sure. Who
right?
is it?
I should, hang on a second here. American Beauty was the movie.
Ann Beatty.
Right, sure. Close enough.
No.
Around there. Hang on a second here. That's what the computer's for. But you know what I'm saying?
Oh, like, Annette Beatty.
And there you go. Annette Beatty. Ann Beatty. Homer Bailey. It all works. We know what we're talking
Whoever,
about.
Whoever. You know what you're talking about. Well, positive affirmations.
Right. But so I'm sitting
mantras.
There. But my point is like, I will win this point. I will win this point. You know what happened? I didn't win the point. I lost the point. The match was over. I tried to support myself. I was there. I was saying positive things. I wasn't sitting there, you're going to lose. And then you lose. I went with the positive. I'm going to make this shot. I'm going to do this. But then.
It didn't work out
sometime,
for you.
But
that's okay.
But you celebrate that you try to do something positive, right?
100%. Yeah, because imagine if you were beating yourself up and having negative self-talk. I mean, that wouldn't help whatsoever. So you might as well take a positive approach, and the result may be the same, but you feel better about the outcome because you gave it your all and you believed in yourself.
See, I think like that's a whole thing going on right now too.
What?
Positive, negative self-talk. Like I keep hearing, like I swear I walk down the street and someone's like, I got a better self-talk. My self-talk's terrible. I beat myself up. I'm hard on myself. I don't think I'm good enough. I can't do it. The world's against me. Like this is kind of getting into the mainstream. I don't know if anybody else feels like that is going on, but I swear, like at the bus stop, you could like hear somebody. I really need to work on my self-talk, but it's true, right?
It's so true. You live in your head all day long, and I do believe that we manifest and attract the things that we say, and so taking a positive approach, whether you believe it or not, can only benefit you.
Can you give an example of something that where you set this positive approach and it actually manifested in something in your life being better than you thought it could ever be? Does anything jump to mind on that?
Sure. Well, meeting you at WGN Radio, that's one of them. You know, I dreamed about sitting here one time and having a conversation with you, you know, back in August when we co-hosted together. And I said, you know what?
That was it. Weren't we just randomly put on the schedule together? Like, and I was like, and I called you. I was like, what do you do? Who are you?
And look at us now, celebrating New Year's Eve with my husband.
Well, you know what? When they told me that I was doing the shift today, I'm like, you know what? It's New Year's Eve. Who should we have on? And I thought, you got to bring Kelly Kidley in.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, we're gonna get a weather and traffic update here coming up in 2 minutes. But let me ask you one question before we do that. What is the difference? Because we talked about New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. And you were like, well, Mark, Carm, you need to set intention. Don't do these resolutions. Set an intention. So I want you to explain to me, and I can feel the rest of the world is on the edge of their seat here, the difference between setting an intention, like you're really going to get it done, but versus making a resolution, and this is going to happen. I'm going to be better in 2020. I'm going to be better starting tomorrow or January 2nd or January whatever. By the way, you don't have to like jump right in on the first. You want to take a nice New Year's Day and relax. I support
that's
that.
A great idea.
But what's the difference between resolution and intention?
Intentions are basically being able to say, I am going to try to do this better, or I am going to get to the gym today. It's an easier, softer way that we can talk to ourselves when we go back to that self-talk. And it also doesn't set us up for failure, because a lot of times when people set resolutions, they set these really high expectations and it's hard to maintain, and then they fail and then they beat themselves up and think that, you know, I failed, I'm never going to be able to do this. And then it's just this negative cycle. So setting intentions, you can do that hour by hour, and being able to be more mindful and present, or change the meal that you're having, or getting to the gym with somebody, or doing something for somebody else.
312-981-7200. If you want to set yourself up for the best year ever, you can ask Kelly a question, and you'll be nice and supportive and encouraging, right?
Of course.
Okay, but I think just reminding back to what you just said, to me, and it's setting an intention is a big time deal. Like you just committed yourself. I am intending for this to happen. Come hell or high water, if my phone's ringing off the hook, if so and so is, if something else happens, no matter what comes in my way on this day, I am getting this done. So
I don't know.
I think that's good, by the way.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. But it's also about how we approach it and how we follow up if we don't find that we're successful. Because sometimes people just give it up completely and then don't end up meeting their goal anyway. So if we're intentional with our behaviors, it's much better.
Okay. All right. Let's follow up on that coming on back here. 312-981-7200. Mark Harmon, we're in for Rokan here till 7:30. It is the last day of 2019. Happy New Year. Good to be with you on 720 WGN. Kelly Kitley in studio with me here, Mark Harmon, till 7:30 on 720 WGN. We're talking about New Year's resolutions and making your life better in 2020. One simple step forward. Just want to put it out there. I am rooting for you. I hope you have the best year ever, or just a slightly better year. That's what I, you know, one step forward. Now, I want to, Kelly, I want to ask you about the person out there who right now is like, I don't care about New Year's resolutions. It's all BS. I basically, somewhere around the I suck, I'm broken, nothing's going to get better for me person, that, which is a friend of mine, by the way. You know,
sounds like a joy. Fun to work with.
Well, but people, you know, life is hard. There's challenges are not easy, and like to get yourself moving is not. You got to get the energy rolling. So what do you say to someone who doesn't even feel like, I'm not setting any goals because nothing good is going to happen. I'm going to have the same exact year that I had last year like I had the last 10 years.
Oh my gosh. And you know, that is oftentimes some of the clientele that I initially come in contact with. And so as a cognitive behavioral therapist, we look at different ways of thinking and core belief systems and trying to restructure those thoughts. And so I oftentimes have people record what those are. And so that they can, you know, again, writing it down because we want to see it and being able to put action into place. And so throughout the day, how often are you talking to yourself like that? And what are you, you know, sometimes people are afraid of success or are afraid of, you know, they sabotage themselves. And a lot of times people are the ones that are getting in their own way. So really being able to look at what is the negative self-talk. And look, you know, more power to people who go into the new year thinking like, I don't really need to do any New Year's resolutions or reflecting. But it is about changing our thinking.
See, I would look, you can't just wave a magical wand and get the job that you want or get the relationship that you want or make somebody healthy. But I think what you're hitting on as far as getting in our own way, at the end of the day, like that is the biggest factor. I know for me personally, I am in my own way at times. I'm not doing the requisite things. And for whatever reason, you know, I just get in my, whatever. I mean, maybe it's an energy thing, but dedication thing. Whatever it is, whatever the fears that I have, I know I'm in my own way. I think we all are, but it's hard to sort of see that sometimes.
It is, which is why I think it can oftentimes be helpful to have another person to talk through that with and to be able to practice different strategies of how to get out of your own way. And sometimes it's a, you know, surrendering to being able to say, I'm not that powerful and, you know, I can't be that hard on myself and taking a more gentle approach.
I'm trying to tee up like people moving from the whole scarcity, the world is against me, I'll never get the job I dream of, my boss is never going to give me a promotion, my wife, my husband is never going to be the spouse that I want to, like, let's get some abundance. Like, anything is possible if you really, you know, as you were talking about before, like, intend it. I intend it to be this way. I am going to get X promotion. I am going to have a better relationship with my wife, my husband, my son, my daughter, my whoever. And you can, it starts with you, right?
It does. And, you know, even when you're describing those things, I feel it in my body. You know, you're the negative self-talk that you were explaining. It's like my shoulders are going down. And then you change the way you're thinking and like my shoulders go up. And that happens to us when we do have conversations with ourselves in our head, which we all do. And so being able to take gratitude, anybody can find something to be grateful for, even if it's like, I have a house to live in, or I have the ability to go for a walk, or I'm able to buy groceries. You know, being able to start with some of the small things that we take for granted can then build up into bigger things like finding a better job or having better relationships. But we can't go from 0 to 100. That we do need to build on that.
What about holding goals for others that they're not necessarily holding for themselves?
You mean like accountability?
Yeah, like, I love my sister. I don't know why she hasn't done X, Y, and Z. I really want to support her. I'm sick and tired of her whatever, her lazy attitude. Or, and by the way,
we can't change other people.
We can't?
No.
Come on.
That's like therapy 101. We can change ourselves. Maybe you could change your approach with her. But, you know, I mean, sometimes I think if these are repeated negative patterns, we can have a direct conversation with somebody and express their concern for them. But oftentimes we, you know, and I find that in my practice, too. Sometimes I want it more than some of my clients.
Right.
And it doesn't work. You have to want it for yourself.
So you're right. You're actually doing the work for them.
Sometimes.
Right.
I've gotten better at that. I can't bring that home.
Well, that's a huge thing, though, for someone in your position, right? You've got to sort of meet your clients where they're at, right?
That is it.
Yeah,
that is
I love it. When I say things that are good, and you, Len, you light up like, you're exactly right, Carmen. You know this game.
That was like in Social Work 101. You've got to meet the client where they're at, because we may have high expectations for them, but a change is a difficult process and it takes time. And the person who is holding the other person accountable can be a support, but we can't do it for them.
And by the way, that's not just in therapy. That's with your friends. That's with your family person.
In life.
Right.
Yeah.
And empathy is a huge part of that, too.
Gosh, you're so good. You should think about becoming a therapist.
thank you. People texting in, one of them I like here. I don't have New Year's resolutions because I try to have those thoughts throughout the whole year, like monthly resolutions. Good for you there.
Love that.
Love a monthly resolution. Do a daily resolution. Get involved.
Hourly.
Yeah. Why not? Hey, the more in touch you are with yourself, the better off you are. Awesome to see you, Kelly.
So good to see you, too.
How do people get a hold of you?
They can go directly to my website, www.kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, Kitley, KITLEY.com.
All right. Great to see you.
Good
Happy
see
New
you
Year.
Happy
you too,
New
Ryan.
Year.
Appreciate you. News coming up, 720 WGN.
And
indeed. Hawks in Calgary coming up at 7:30. I am with you till then. Your bridge from the Sun Bowl to Blackhawks hockey. Going to get a news update here in about 45 seconds. Thanks to Kelly Kitley for stopping by today as we tried to have a little resolution talk going into 2020. Miguel Cervantes is coming up after 5:30. He is Hamilton. The show is coming to an end on January the 5th, a 3-year-plus run. Miguel has made himself a major, major footprint in this city in the time he spent here. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him coming up here after the news. Adam Hoge's going to be with us as well coming up. And Andy Mazur and I are going to have a conversation about Andy Mazur tweets, which I'm really looking forward to at some point in the program. But UGN, Miguel Cervantes is in studio. We might have to break out the bottle of wine right here.
Happy New Year!
I mean, the show Hamilton is coming to a Chicago end on January the 5th. By the way, Happy New Year with you till 7:30. My name is Mark Carmen. Roll Count, of course, has the New Year's Eve off today, so good to be with you. And great to see you, Miguel. You got to be feeling a little verklempt here.
Listen,
you know,
it's the weirdest emotion. I am so excited for a break. I've been doing this for 3.5 years, solid. Maybe a week off here and there. And I'm really, really happy to have some time. I'm going to see what Chicago looks like on a Wednesday night. I hear it's great. I hear there's great places to go. But at the same time, this job, this life, this experience in Hamilton and Chicago has just been unbelievable. And to even for a while, I thought it was going to go forever in my brain. I knew it couldn't, but in my mind, I thought it could. And now that it's coming to an end, it doesn't feel real. I'm very sad.
But when you started it off, someone had told you, hey, man, you'll be doing this for the next 3.5 years. You're going to have a whole family experience. People in Chicago are going to, let's not go too far, but fall in love with you. I mean, like, really, you've made quite a footprint here.
I don't know how I could have expected. You know, Hamilton had started to, when I started in 2016 in New York, you know, I was only there for a really quick second in New York. Chicago was always going to be my destination. But I started there and it was already a thing. It was already kind of what it was. But, you know, with the way that my personal life has intertwined with this Hamilton experience and how that has been wrapped up in this Chicago experience, there's no way I could have known. There's no way anyone could have told me what I would feel, how I would feel now, 3 years later. You know, the experience, it feels like it just started. It feels like it just started. And, you know, and we're shutting it down. I can't even really wrap my head around it. I'm going to start crying right now. Don't do it to me.
No, you're good. And by the way, emotions are allowed here. This is a New Year's Eve show. Let's have a, we can celebrate. celebrate. We can get into the tears. It's all good. People are texting in. I've seen Hamilton 15 times. For real, text. You're going Saturday.
That's professional Hamilton right there.
That, I mean, that's big time. I'm going Saturday. I'm going Sunday for the last performance.
Wait, who's coming Sunday? Good luck. I may not say one word correctly.
Really?
I think about it now. I've been on stage a couple times this past week, and I'll look back at the guys, Lafayette, Jefferson, I mean, Lafayette and John Lawrence, and I'll sort of, you know, during Raise a Glass to Freedom, and I'll look back at these guys and just start, I said, wait, stop. We're not there yet. And I mean, it's a real thing. And we actually had a, you know, I'll give you a little insider here. Last night, the director, Tommy Cale, came into town and he said, you know, I'm really proud of you, everyone. I'm so happy that this thing happened the way it was. And he said, and just let it happen. Let all that happen.
Yeah.
Because this is special.
That's, I mean, doing the character, I'm sure, and you can do it falling out of bed now, but a huge challenge to originally take it on and feel comfortable doing it. But to actually be comfortable in the character and being yourself at the same time, that seems like a decent lift right there.
Well, and you know, that's sort of, you know, kind of, that goes into it's a really deep question as to, you know, the craft of acting and be, you know, I can think of other things while my body and brain are doing the Hamilton thing. And now it is starting to happen where I start to see myself being Hamilton for the last few times with these people who I've spent so much time with and been so close to. And so I am beginning to feel all of those pressures at the same time.
So real fast, and we'll get a check on traffic and weather in 60 seconds here, but you grew up in Dallas, Texas, and you wanted to be...
Whatever I was going to be. I think I was sort of open. Teacher, soccer player.
Remember the soccer player. Yeah,
anything. And then sort of the path began to form in front of me, and college and theater and musical and singing all of a sudden became something that I found and became good at and got a job.
Way to go. Feel free to celebrate Miguel here, 312-981-7200. I want to come back and talk about your family and that part of the experience here. And also the shoe caddy, which is sweeping the damn nation.
Sweeping the nation.
We're going to get to that in a second. But the 547, Miguel Cervantes in studio here. Hamilton coming to a close on January the 5th. My name is Mark Harmon. Rokan, of course, with the day off today. Happy New Year. I shouldn't be amazed, but I'm kind of amazed by these texts. And I know you've had an incredible, ridiculous run. But most people go out and see something, a play, they go once. And that's it. I've seen it 25 times from the 847, from the 630. I've seen it 15 times. From the 217, I've seen it 4 times. I mean, this, multiple. They see it. It's not cheap to go, by the way. And they go again.
I think that there's a and the cool part about this show particularly is that it was so accessible to the folks in the area. You know, in New York, Broadway, there's so many tourists, everyone's coming in, you can't get a ticket to save your life. But we made it accessible. And that's sort of one of the things that we wanted to do when we came here. We never wanted to be, you know, look at us, we're Hamilton dropping on, you know, gracing your city with our show. It was more about, hey, can we be here? You tell us if you like us. And we wanted people to come 25 times if they wanted to. And we wanted to make it a little more accessible so people come from outside of the city to come see it here. And I don't think it's going to happen in New York. Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen on the tour. You know, I don't think that happens other places. But that's what the special part about this production was.
Little community. I love it. For those who are like, well, what is Hamilton? Maybe I'm thinking about, which is totally cool.
There's got to be a few people out there, right?
And they're thinking about, you know what, I want to see the show before it goes. What story are you telling?
We're telling the story of a historical figure who you think is the president. He wasn't. And he's on the $10 bill. And how he got from an immigrant kid to that person. But we don't tell it just like a musical. I don't like music. I hate musicals, or I don't like theater. It's not that. It's an experience. It's an evening of entertainment, of thought-provoking dance, of thought-provoking words. So many people have told me, I don't see shows, and I loved this show. And in the entertainment business, and any business ever, there's going to be something that's the most amazing thing you've ever seen. Or that's what people tell you anyway. And you go there, and maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. This one always will be. And it's not because of me. You know. I like to think sometimes I add a little something. But what they have created, the evening of entertainment and thought and thinking that you go through is something that we may never see again in our lifetime.
Well, I'm pro giving yourself some credit here. So
well, I've been around for a while, so maybe I do have a little something going on.
Somebody's got to play the role and do it to the level that you've done it, that you guys have had this success. So congratulations. I'm not going to let you take that off the table. You've been very open and vulnerable with your family. You lost your daughter during this time, who was battling seizures, and I guess passed away in your wife's arms. Yeah. Is that all correct? Yeah. And so it's just a crazy part of the journey, and it's recent, and you're moving forward. I mean, just when you boil that all into, you know, I'm doing this show and this happened in the Chicago portion of your life. I mean, it's just a whole lot right there.
Well, I speak about it in terms of the arc of this time. I started the Hamilton journey in May of 2016. I also found out that my daughter was diagnosed with a very, very severe form of epilepsy. Same month, May 2016. We come here, Hamilton's now closing, and we have now come to an end of that part of our life as well, of the struggles and journey with her and her epilepsy, and the struggle that was for our family and for my wife and all of us, and they will always be also connected. And to anyone out there listening, to anyone out here who ever wrote a card or a text or a tweet or anything to myself or my wife, I need them to know that connection that we had with these people during the struggles, during the most difficult part of our lives, was felt, and it will always be connected to this show and this city. And so if there's Hamilton up for me later, it will be amazing, but it will never be this. And that's part of it. And the journey with my daughter and with her death, and the support that we got from the people here I don't think I can ever be grateful enough.
Well, the first time I met you, we were playing at a golf outing. It was for the Nora Project, and Lawrence Rero and our good friend Adam Levy are great people, and have raised a bunch of money and trying to help kids who are going to school and live the same life that everybody else out there. And so I meet you, and you know, I'm not a theater buff, and they're like, Hamilton's there. I'm like, who? And they're like, I'm like, oh, okay. And you know, you had so much energy, and you had no ego about you. And then I like heard afterwards, like, oh, he's also dealing with this. And it's like, I was just so incredibly impressed that you were bouncing around, having a great day, weren't like, had some big ego that I'm this guy, because I, you know, you meet people all the time who aren't doing like what you're doing and have a really inflated opinion on themselves. And it's like, why are you walking around with that attitude, dude? I get it. You make a bunch of money at your whatever. That's cool. But you were able to balance all of it and just make it seem normal, which was, I just thought was really cool.
I always think of this Hamilton platform that I give, this sort of experience. I mean, it's hard to say what it actually is. But when we started this, we were also carrying this burden of with her diagnosis and her illness. And so instead of crawling into a hole and just being sad and angry all the time, I was plenty sad and I was plenty angry a lot. I wanted to channel that into a way that could maybe help someone, maybe use this Hamilton thing to change someone's life and give this whole thing a deeper meaning than it could. It already has an amazing meaning, but to sort of reach out and say and yell and scream and to the rooftops and say, we're also fighting and struggling. And if we could just change someone's life, if we can help someone with this, maybe our struggles, it'll, you know, obviously if I could give all the Hamilton back, if I could give every word and every clap and applause back to have my daughter, I would.
Of course.
But we can't. And right. So instead, you smile and you laugh and you go to these events and say, look at me, look at us, look at my wife. We're out here fighting and someone pay attention. And if we can change someone, if we can help one person, then it's worth it.
Well, you guys raised a bunch of dough and you're a Cure Board member, right?
Wife, Kelly Cervantes. Kelly is the Cure Board member, and I consider myself like the monkey with the cymbals, like shh, and then, you know, look at my wife, go to her stuff, go see what she's doing.
Well, you're raising awareness, you're trying to do everything you can to push it forward. So congratulations on that. And and just you know, like from my
Kelly Cervantes.com, by the way, check it out. Yeah. She's got an amazing blog cataloging our journey through the last year, so it's you got to check that out.
Yeah. And you know, I have from my own family history, I have some understanding, a drop of understanding of what y'all went through, and just the balance of like how tough your life is and the remorse of it. And then now you have this life that's not, you don't have that same burden, but it's always in your heart. And you, there's some, I would assume there's some like guilt level, like I could have done more, and I should feel remorseful, but my life just got a little bit easier. But you know, all of it's confusing, right?
We went to the airport to on a trip and got through security like there was nothing. And before, we travel like a rock band,
yeah,
because we have bunch of cases and medical equipment and gigantic rolling oxygen, and it takes forever to get through. And we walked through and we watched the, and it was amazing,
yeah.
And yet we watched. We looked at the table where we normally would have had to stop to get checked, and we're terribly sad. So how can we be so happy and relieved and terribly heartbroken at the same exact time? And that is the definition of what we are. You know, look at your child suffering,
yeah,
and tell me that you don't want that to stop.
Yeah, that too. It's confusing
and
as hell, right?
How do you? And yet, tell me you don't want your child around. And so this is a journey that parents go through. The special needs community, they should be given awards on a constant basis because they go through so many tough things. And we want to, and we're going to continue to bring that to light.
Straight heroes, 100%. Yourself any rate, all right, on a positive note, walking out, and all of it's positive, by the way. I love the conversation, and thank you so much for being vulnerable, yeah, and having it. I want to talk about your shoe caddy, which is an invention that you had, and we got 30 seconds, so tell everybody what they should do for their golf life.
Shoecaddy.com, divot tool, ball marker, tees. Get it out of your pocket. You can put it in a little pouch, clip it on your shoe. I've been playing golf forever, and I kept losing all my stuff. I invented it. It's my side hustle. We call it a side hustle in the acting business, something that doesn't have to do with what you're doing. Me and my buddy, we made it. It's up for sale. Shoecaddy.com. Go get you one. Check it out.
It's S-H-U.
S-H-U-C-A-D-D-Y.com.
So if you want to support Miguel and his family and just and help your golf game at the same time.
And I may even put it in the envelope myself.
It's a beautiful thing. Hey, great to see you. Hey,
thanks, Mark.
And have a great final weekend.
Hey, man. Happy New Year, everybody. If you're going to see me on Sunday, sorry if I cry a lot.
Miguel Cervantes, 720 WGN Hamilton. I didn't think people were smoking that much anymore. That, like, actually wanted to quit. Like, we had the weed talk today. You're not trying to quit. But okay, that's good. Number 7, quit smoking. Stay healthy. I hear you. 8 is spend more time with family and friends. 9 is travel more. And 10 is read more. Reading is such a good, that's just a beautiful thing. Let me see what's going on in the text line here. Ride my bike, cut back on smoking. There you go. There it is, the smoking coming through. I like it. Ride your bike. Just remember, riding your bike is a great activity. You feel so good while you're on the bike. You feel so good after. That's a great one. I love it. Let's see. Lost my husband in 2018. It's time to be more social. Maybe I'll find love. I love that. Get on out there. Got to move forward in life. I know it's not easy, but raising a glass to you. Get on out there, and who knows? It doesn't even have to be, you know, real love. Just connection, period. You'll feel better. So that's awesome. Go for it in 2020. Karm supports you. So does WGN. News in 2.5. Big day out at Hallis Hall. Mark Carmen with you on 720 WGN, joined by my guy, best Bears reporter in the damn land, Adam Hoge. You can read his stuff, of course, at WGNradio.com. And Hoagie, you were out there today, and Matt Nagy looked at you, and Ryan Pace looked at you and said that they had to think about things. And then they thought about him and got rid of their offensive coordinator, Mark Helfrich, their offensive line coach, Harry Heaston, their tight ends coach, Kevin Gilbride, who was coaching me and you, and their special teams assistant, Brock Olivo. That's, I guess, the biggest news of the day, and then we can get into the rest of the press conference. But let's start there. Were you surprised at all by any of these moves?
Certainly not surprised that there was movement with the offensive staff. I guess if there's any small surprise, it's that Dave Ragone, the quarterback's coach, was not among those let go. I'm not I'm not completely surprised by that. The only reason I'm surprised at all is because, you know, he would have been an easy scapegoat because obviously the quarterback struggled this season. But I do think they actually like the work that Dave Ragone does with Mitchell Trubisky. And, you know, Ragone is regarded as a good coach. So not completely surprised that he wasn't among those let go. But if you really track what's happening here, especially with Mark Helfrich and Harry Hiestand, those were the two that they weren't necessarily in charge of the running game, but they had a huge input in the running game. Part of the reason why Helfrich was brought in, and Harry Hiestand, of course, working with the offensive line. So if you just think about it like, oh, the Bears haven't been able to run the football very well the last two seasons, they obviously need to try a different approach there. And I think that that explains why specifically those two guys were let go.
So for the Bears fan that's driving around right now or sitting at home and is wondering, does any of this really matter? What would you say?
Well, I think it does because I think, look, you're not going to fire the head coach, obviously, but the head coach is also the guy calling the plays, and this is his offense. So the question is, what kind of moves would Nagy make to improve his offense, which frankly hasn't been good in two seasons with him as the head coach? They ranked 29th this year in both points and yards. So you had to make some type of changes. And specifically to me, the two biggest question marks are obviously the quarterback, which we can get to in a second, but improving the running game, I think, is so important. And I think that's where these changes here are really where the changes are directed in fixing this running game. Nagy knows it has to be done. Now he's going to go out, and it'll be interesting to see not only who he brings in, but how he goes about it, what that structure looks like. Because, you know, I've been putting the name out there in the last 24 hours, Pat Shurmur, who was just fired as the Giants head coach. And he's somebody that comes from the Andy Reid coaching tree who made Case Keenum, of all people, look like a downfield deep passing threat at quarterback a couple years ago with the Vikings and improved that offense from the mid-20s to top 10 in Minnesota. That's why he got that Giants job, but that's also why the Bears interviewed him for the job that eventually went to Matt Nagy. So Ryan Pace has interviewed him before. There's some familiarity there. And so I wonder if that's the type of move the Bears would make. However, that type of move might come with Nagy having to give up play calling duties. And is that something he's willing to do? That remains to be seen. I don't know. But I do think, to answer your question, Carm, this does matter. I think it is an indication that these guys are committed to making real change on offense and making this thing work in 2020.
Adam Hogue with us here on 720 WGN. The Bears with their season-ending press conference, and then after the press conference, getting rid of their offensive coordinator, their offensive line coach, their tight ends coach, and their special team assistant, Brock Olivo. Brock, I did not know you, but you will be missed. All right, let's get to the quarterback. It was painful, I think, for everybody, if you were really dialed in on the press conference and listening today and just hearing how basically Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy were just so defensive of Mitch, and he's still growing and he's still learning, and it's too early to really know if he's going to be a stud quarterback or not, 41 games in, 29 starts with Matt Nagy. But none of that was surprising, right? Like, right. I didn't think that they were going to be in there and be like, Mitch is going to be in competition. That wouldn't have made sense from a salary cap thing, and it wouldn't have made sense for how they're just trying to build this thing. There has been no indication this year that they weren't all in on Trubisky, so I wasn't surprised. I'm sure you weren't either.
No, I'm not, and I'm not surprised that Mitch is the plan for 2020. If I'm surprised at all about anything today, I was slightly surprised that they were all in on that idea and how they expressed it. I mean, expressing the amount of confidence they did in Mitch Trubisky. You know, Ryan Pace saying very clearly, Mitch Trubisky is our starter. Being so matter-of-fact about it was the only thing that I found at least slightly surprising, but you do have to keep in mind here that they have to be careful in what they say. You do not want to tip your hand when it comes to personnel moves. We're officially in the offseason, and this is all now about approving your team. And it's a competition, whether it's free agency or the draft. You don't always want it to be so matter-of-fact in giving out your game plan. So, as I always say every offseason, the actions will speak louder than words. And I think you saw, not even an hour after the press conference, maybe it was an hour or so after the press conference, the actions of letting four assistants go. Well, that probably spoke louder than anything that was actually said in this press conference today. So, look, I think the quarterback room is going to look different because you have two expiring contracts already with Chase Daniel and Tyler Bray. The Bears, I believe, will go out and bring in somebody that I don't think it'll be a full open competition, but I do think that that quarterback room, quite frankly, it'll be a disappointment if that quarterback room come the spring is not deeper than it is as the 2019 season ended.
Well, so you bring up a very important point and just something to remember. The Bears went out and they signed Mike Glennon. I mean, that was going to be their quarterback. And then Mike Glennon is at some promotional event before the season watching the draft, and they drafted Mitchell Trubisky. So not only did they sort of lie to the fans, lying is too strong, but they weren't, you know, forthright about what they were going to do with the fans. They weren't even forthright with the quarterback they signed. So who knows what they're going to do, right?
Well, they misled people, but the reason why they did it is because they were misleading 31 other teams. I mean, that's the game move, and unfortunately, sometimes in the cutthroat world of the NFL, that means that the fans need to be misled just a little bit for the greater good of the team, for lack of putting it in a better way. And unfortunately, the guy that got the worst of it in that situation was Mike Glennon, who was a very nice guy that got put in an awkward situation with the draft. But yes, that's a great example. So let's. I realize a lot of people are upset today with the press conference. People, this is what I've learned, Carm, right now, and I get it. Right now, people are just angry. They're angry that the Bears went 8-8 instead of going back to the playoffs. And when you're in this position right now as a franchise, it's hard to win. It's hard to win the PR battle. And so today, I think, was really going to be a tough day for them to come out of the press conference and everybody be happy, right? That wasn't going to happen because it doesn't change what happened in the regular season. I just want everyone to maybe take a step back and let's look closer at what moves are made over the next few months rather than put all the stock into what was said today.
Right. And I think a good reminder for everybody as we wrap up 2019 and go into 2020, and I know that like the diehard doesn't want to hear what I'm about to say, but really at the end of the day, you know, have a little perspective on your sports. It's not going to make a huge difference. If you're a diehard Bears fan and they win the Super Bowl, it'd be the greatest thing ever for about a day. And then you go back to your life and it really didn't actually matter either. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you want to experience it. I get it. We're all in. But, you know, let's remember that we're dealing in the toy department here, right? When I hear people like, I'm just so upset, like, hey, man, it is sports. Nobody, I don't know. Do you get what I'm saying here?
I do. It's the toy department of life. It definitely is. But it still brings a lot of people a lot of joy and a lot of anger, too.
Yes. Ed Obradovich is knocking on window one here. What did you just say? OB, I got it. It's important. I get it. It means a lot to a lot of people. It means a lot to me. That's how I manage it, I guess. When things don't go the way, well, let's just remember that's not that important here, team. What did you like the most about today, Adam? Or what are you most optimistic about going into the offseason as to what they're going to do?
Well, what I'm most optimistic about is that I still believe the window to win is open. And people forget the Bears were still number one in points allowed in the NFC this year. They have a good defense, and they did that remarkably with a ton of injuries. So, not having Akeem Hicks all year, I realize it wasn't perfect. I realize they didn't take the ball away as much as they did last year, and that it definitely needs to prove in 2020. But this is still a good defense. I think there are pieces to work with on offense, but that being said, there is a reality that the Bears, the window to win within the rookie quarterback contract, which matters a lot in today's NFL, is closing quickly. By the way, that also, getting back to the Trubisky conversation, those are actions that will matter here in the coming months. When I asked Ryan Pace today, will you pick up the fifth-year option on Mitchell Trubisky, he did not commit to that. The reason I asked him that today was because in this exact same press conference a year ago, he said we were going to pick up the fifth-year option for Leonard Floyd. Today, that answer was a lot different. It was, we're not there yet. So that's another indication that is all in as they sounded on Trubisky today. Let the actions speak louder than the words. So there's a lot of decisions like that to sort out this offseason. But I do remain optimistic that the window is open. You know how people had them pegged as a team to regress this year, and we all kind of fought against that, even though in hindsight it made a lot of sense. I would start to peg this team actually as a rebound team in 2020 when you do look at the talent across the roster that exists and the fixes that can be made in the coming months.
I like it. Let's wrap up here with the quarterback. And I thought one comment from Matt Nagy, or a bunch of comments actually from Matt Nagy today, basically saying that he doesn't really still understand yet how to be a quarterback, how to read defenses, right? I mean, he said that multiple times. Well, we want him to become a master of it, and then he kind of like laid out. I wonder, like, I'm hearing it, it's like, yeah, you want him to do that, but, and I'm sure they know this too, it just remains like he might not be able to do it. He might just not be smart enough to read defenses to make him successful.
Well, and I think that that's fair at this point. Look, this was year three. And that's the thing that I think I totally understand with fans being, you know, struggling to accept the commitment today with Trubisky, because this was year three and it was supposed to be year two, the whole thing with Matt Nagy, and there's still these many questions here as 2019 comes to a close. So I get that, but I also think that Nagy was very forthright today in explaining that. He specifically brought up a moment in the third quarter of the Washington game back in week three when there was a touchdown available to really be, you know, serve as the dagger in a game the Bears had, and Mitch decided to check it down to Trey Burton. So he, you know, Nagy came prepared with examples, and he said that this offseason, the thing he wants Trubisky to work on the most is becoming a master of coverages. So that says it all right there. Can he do it? Look, there are examples of quarterbacks that started to figure it out late in their career. I don't like the Drew Brees example because he switched teams. Eli Manning comes to mind, though. If you go back and look at Eli Manning's career in the middle of year three, half of New York wanted him thrown out of town. So, you know, there are examples of it working. That doesn't mean it's going to work for Mitchell Trubisky, though. But if he can figure out the zone coverage, specifically zone, he kills man. He's good against man defenses. He needs to figure out the rest. And if he can, and he has the right pieces around him, that's the game plan here going forward. It is risky, but you also understand where the Bears are coming from. Because quite frankly, switching quarterbacks is just as risky, if not more. They don't have the draft capital, and you got to spend a ton of money to go out and get a replacement through free agency.
Right, and for the casual football fan out there, you do have a limited amount of money to spend in the NFL, and when Adam's talking about a rookie contracts for quarterbacks, you pay them a lot less than you pay guys later in their career, which allows you to pay other guys on your roster more money, which in theory strengthens the whole team if you have somebody at quarterback on a rookie deal, not making a lot of dough. You can pay guys like Khalil Mack a ton of money. And let's actually wrap up with Khalil Mack. There's a lot of focus on him right now, Adam, on a down year, and defense is scheming for him. And I kind of look at the way he was used by Chuck Pagano, and I wonder if there's some conversations that are going to go on there where they can maximize what should be their best defensive player.
You know, that was another interesting and underrated moment I thought of the press conference today, because I asked Ryan Pace how he evaluates Khalil Mack's season, and you know, he gave the answer I thought, which was, look, we're really lucky to have him and team scheme for him, but he'd be the first to tell you he'd like to have more production. That's basically been the company line all year, and it's also accurate. Teams are scheming for him. It's hard. But at the end of the day, you'd like to have him have more sacks, more than 8.5. But when Nagy got, or when Pace got done talking, Nagy jumped in, and that's pretty much what he pointed to. I don't have the exact quote in front of me right now, but he essentially said, "Look, that's something that the defensive coaches are going to be looking at this offseason, is basically the scheme. How can they? And I was saying this all year. How can they scheme him open more if he's getting all the attention, or at least get other people open to get to the quarterback? Because Khalil Mack's still an incredible player, but everyone wants more production, and if it's not coming from him because he's getting double and triple teamed, it's got to be coming from other players on the field who are singled.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Green Bay's got a guy, Za'Darius Smith, mm-hmm. and they line him up all over the place. And next thing you know, he's just in the backfield and he's eating the quarterback. And I'm like, why couldn't you do that with Mac, man? Move him around, let him roam, figure out where he thinks the weakness is, and just let him go from there.
Mac does move around, but not quite to that level. I get what you're coming from. There were a few exotic looks where you'd have like Mac lined up over a center or guard at certain points in the season. But I understand where you're coming from. You can do it more. Some of that, though, I will never forget Brandon Staley, who was the outside linebackers coach and ended up going to Denver with Vic Fangio last year. But last year, he just gave this great explanation to us about how Khalil Mack breaks down his opponents throughout a game. In the ten, like, people, when they're watching football, don't realize that sometimes there's those individual one-on-one battles that start in the first quarter and end in the fourth, and it's a constant mind game, and nobody's better at Khalil Mack at setting up a move early in a game that he capitalizes on later in the game. So sometimes when you're moving a guy around, it prevents him from doing that, especially if that player likes to do that.
Interesting. Good stuff. And by the way, for anybody out there thinks, Carmen, you don't know more than the coaches. You're right. I don't. I just throw things out there that once in a while might have some level of validity.
That was a good thought. It was a good thought. And Pagano's going to make adjustments with Khalil Mack. He has to.
Yeah. Adam, great stuff all year. Looking forward to transitioning to the White Sox winning a World Series here in 2020, because we all know that's coming. Damn it, let's go. What an offseason.
I love it. Happy New Year, Carm, and Happy New Year to all of our listeners.
You too, Adam Hogue. It's 720 WGN. And thank you so much for listening this afternoon. It's great to be with you. Thanks to our guy, Adam Hogue, for just jumping on. Miguel Cervantes Hamilton was in studio today. That was awesome. Kelly Kitley, who is a clinical social worker, joining me in studio for your resolutions. That was awesome. And our guy, what was our gentleman's name from the dispensary who joined us here? I forget. Whatever. That was a great conversation. Really enjoyed it.
It's Leo Barajas.
Thank you, Leo Barajas. Thank you so much for being on today. I'll be back tomorrow in the afternoon doing sports. So looking forward to that. Brian Noonan will be hosting, and Blackhawks hockey is coming up in 2 minutes. Chris Bowden is ready to go with his 3-ring binder to give you your pregame show. Bowden is prepared and then some, and going old school, and coming up next in now 90 seconds. I got a ton of texts here on New Year's resolutions from people, or just one particular thing. I want to try new recipes. I keep making the same thing. Go get it, man. Do something different. I love it. That's awesome. Let's see what else here. Happy New Year. Worry less. Cutting out what you worry is cool. What you can't control, right? If you can drop that, that's a huge win. How about this one? Tell your loved ones at least once a week that you care about them and that you love them. You never know when. Life is too short. Take for granted. God bless and happy holidays. Happy New Year. That's awesome, right? Give that. Make that extra call. You're thinking about your dad, your mom, your brother, your sister, your son, your friend, whoever. Making that call it's just a beautiful thing. And let's see here. Thank you for acknowledging that, yes, my belly is my marriage, whatever, getting belly. Thank you for that support. Work on my timeliness. Quit pushing the clock to the last second. I relate to you, sir or madam. I relate 100%, because there's a certain excitement when you push it to that last second and then you get it done under the horn, but it's really not good self-care. I got you. And some bunch of more. I want to communicate with my family and friends more. We're all looking for that connection out there. No doubt about it. So, be safe tonight. Don't go crazy, or go crazy, but do it in the confines of your own home.